You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey guys, wanted to throw out a quick promotion to one of our friends and allies and helpers at here at OneOfUs.net. That's Nick Ties, who you may have heard with Justin Zarian on some of the Breakfast Pub episodes. But he has his own website that's great, Unapologetic Geek Out, or the UGO podcast. And they're going to be at Anime Austin this year, held at the Holiday Inn in Midtown Austin, July 27th to 29th in the Vendor Hall. Just look for their big sign with their mascot, Isabella the Derpy Dragon. They're going to be having contests to earn merch and prizes, playing games including Super Fight and Movie Pitch, as well as the panels are going to have familiar faces there, including Harris O'Malley doing Ask Dr. Nerdlove panel and a We Are Error reunion with Chris Herman and John Romo's Unapologetic Look Back at JRP. RPGs. So, by all means, get your tickets to Anime Austin. Check it out. Check out Unapologetic Geek Out. Picture, if you will, a man running a website all by himself. That website, OneOfUs.net. But there are many challenges down the road, ones even he cannot possibly imagine. Dark challenges. Like, how do you get the money to keep a site like that going? Well, you do it by getting subscribers. Mysterious, anonymous subscribers out in the ether who come in and give subscriptions in order to keep the site running. Sure, they get free bonus content and a lot of it, but who are they really? People who are OneOfUs.net. People who are one of us. Or is it Oscar Blues Brewing Company? The beer brewery that made the first craft beer in the can. How did they even come up with that idea? Did it come from aliens? From something that's before time and man tread on this planet? No one can ever know, but the truth is, there's genius there, as their beers are delicious. And they have brew pubs located in North Carolina, two in Colorado, and one in Austin. Oscar Blues, a sponsor for OneOfUs.net. Between Oscar Blues and you, the potential subscriber, is the only hope this man and this website has. There's a signpost up ahead, and it reads, OneOfUs.net needs you. Highly suspect reviewers, this is the movie to review if you choose to accept it. The problem is everybody chose to accept it. I'm like, sorry, you can't go. Yeah. Well, everybody wants to see the new Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, I was really happy someone put their name in the beginning. I was like, wait, we can do that already?
Oh, that was me. Sorry. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. It's like, me too. I want to go see you soon.
Because Chris and I get the same email, so I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, me. Yeah. And part of the reason for that is because this art played several weeks ago in L.A., and the reviews that came out of those from, like, big-name critics were like, holy shit! Like, we knew the series had gotten, like, had really kind of stepped up and continued to evolve and get better, but this was like, they were like, this is like nothing you've even seen in the series. And I go, great. I wish I hadn't read that. Because now I'm going to go in, and no matter how hard you try to tamp it down, like that excitement, you're like, I know I'm going to be the guy coming out of this going, yeah, it was all right. I don't know why everybody liked it so much.
And were you?
No, this was
I don't know if you were leading up to that or not.
No, so I thought I'd give you that little bit of suspense there.
Yeah,
I'm just glad my phone didn't explode when you guys put out the message of whether or not to join this.
yeah, this is bringing back Christopher McQuarrie, who did the last one. Was it Rogue Nation.
Rogue Nation, yeah. Also directed my favorite movie of all time.
Which is?
Way of the Gun.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sweet. I haven't seen that in a long time. I remember liking it quite a bit. It was kind of a Sam Peckinpah tribute. Yeah. Yeah. But this really also feels kind of like the third film of a trilogy of Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, and this, where, like, even though there's pieces in this that tie all the way back to even the beginning, the first
film.
Well,
3 and 2.
You know.
The first one.
I mean, it brings in elements from all of them. Yeah, but it definitely, like, tonally feels like, and it, even with the villain, who's returning from the last one, feels like we've kind of come in this three-movie arc to this point.
We kind of have.
With Tom Cruise, once again, getting handed an impossible mission in the way he always does. He's got the thing that like says it's going to explode if you choose to accept it or not. There's nothing to say, yes, I choose to accept the mission.
But this time he's haunted.
Yeah, well, he's haunted?
He's haunted.
I missed the ghost.
Well, he's been kind of haunted for a little while.
Yeah, well, yeah, we see Michelle Monaghan in a dream sequence, yeah. And you're like, that's apocalyptic. And you're like, Michelle Monaghan's in this? Yeah. I haven't seen her for a while.
Didn't she pop up in a cameo in either the last one or the one before last?
Yeah, she was in 4. And so, here's the thing I like about the Mission Impossible franchise is that I call them the art house action franchise because until now, every single one has been directed by a different person who has a extremely different take on what the franchise should be. And like, one is very much the spy thriller. 2 is a John Woo action film, is only a John Woo action film could be.
Sure.
And then with 3, it seems like they got their act together and started telling this more cohesive story.
More consistent.
That was the Abrams one, wasn't it?
They've been knocking it out of the park every time. And dear God, does Christopher McQuarrie do a great job in this movie.
He really did. So than in Rogue Nation, where right off the bat, you're like, wow, you really get this. Here, it's like, yes, and now I'm finding off the rough points and getting it much even better.
Rogue Nation was the last one. I thought the story of Rogue Nation was not, like, really...
I mean, it was
not
fine.
Really good, but the action sequences were really great.
It's like, the thing with all these...
Writing the script while they were shooting it, too. Yeah, like, it was very
well,
much
with this one, last second with movie. This one, they were.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, like, literally, they said they had shot several big scenes before they even had a script. Because they did what they do. They go, does anyone really care that much about the details of the plot of Mission Impossible movies? Or are you mainly watching for the incredible drop your jaw to the floor stunt and action sequences in these movies?
But then people like me, though, like, when I see McQuarrie's name or something, instantly I raise the bar up a little bit. Because, you know. It's Christopher McQuarrie.
Well, the plot, such as it is, like we said, he gets the mission. It involves he has to try and make an exchange to get some plutonium that's been stolen. It gets fucked up. The bad guys get away with the plutonium, and now they're like, okay, what now? And it turns out that the bad guys in question are connected to a villain from the last movie, Sean Harris, who was captured playing Solomon Lane. He was the leader of the evil syndicate, and who's based on their whole idea is peace through apocalypse, basically.
Yeah.
You know,
the Ra's al Ghul,
basically. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was the same as
Thanos, you know, whatever. Yeah. They're like, we want him back, and we'll give you the actual plutonium. And there's lots of steps along the way. It's much more complicated than that. Honestly, I enjoyed the plot for this one a lot more than I did a lot of the others. I was actually kind of really into it and following the story. And there's the added complication that the CIA now are kind of like, isn't your guy Ethan gone rogue, like, in every movie before this? Mission?
We don't really
trust him, so we're sending one of our badasses, played by Henry Cavill, to
his mustache.
Like, and his mustache.
Keep an eye on him. I will never let go of that mustache. Yeah, like, the mustache defeated the Justice League, damn it.
He's there to keep an eye on you, but also, they like right off the bat, they don't like each other, because Ethan Hunt's like, oh, I've heard about you. You're that guy who just is like, well, let's just kill everyone here, and one of them will be the bad guy. He's one of those types. Spies.
He doesn't like to ask questions.
And Ethan is more of the type that's like, no, we have to do everything we can to save everyone, which would, to be fair, in real life, Henry Cavill would probably be the much better spy. You know, if you're doing deep black ops work, you can't be like, watch out, there's a woman with a baby. No, you pretty much just got to get the job done if nukes are involved. But so this leads them, of course, into various picturesque places in Paris and London. And where was the last one? Kashmir?
Kashmir.
Yeah. With all sorts of incredibly huge stunt and chase sequences. Henry Cavill cocking his arms and throwing people through bathroom walls.
I'm so jealous and in awe of him at the same time.
Even Alec Baldwin getting to be cool, introducing... And I don't... Angela Bassett wasn't in one of these others, right?
This was the first one, where she's kind of the CIA
handler. There's a lot to really like here, including Rebecca Ferguson, who returns here, and I love the way they kind of set up where you're not really sure exactly what her motivation is. Whose side are you on anyway, lady? Who
Which
she
is
was like...
pretty the, much what she was in Rogue Nation.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Which, like, she nails it both times, though.
Mm-hmm. And Vanessa Kirby playing a... questionable ethics, questionably moral sort of in-between arms dealer.
She's a broker, but she's
great. You're like, wow, you're mesmerizing in this part.
Super mesmerizing.
Yeah. I love that connection to the first one in her character, though.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, yeah.
But what's her connection to the first one?
She's Vanessa Redgrave's, Max's a daughter or granddaughter.
Oh, I did not realize. I didn't even put two and two together on that one.
Yeah. But she too kept on throwing out Max.
I didn't even think about it. Yeah. I was so memorized by her eyes.
Amazing eyes. Wes Bentley appears in the last act of this all of a sudden, and you're like, it's Wes Bentley. I was like, oh, he's going to be a secret bad guy. It's like, no, he's just some schmuck. It's fine. Yeah, Wes Bentley going, I swear, I'm not on heroin anymore. Give me a bigger role.
As far as we know.
We reviewed P2, his movie.
You find the beauty in one trash bag, and suddenly you're on heroin.
No, he really was.
I'm joking.
He admitted that, after talking about specifically the movie P2, but a whole bunch of films he did, he was like, I didn't really care about the script. All I looked at was the paycheck for 5 years because it was just about how much heroin I could buy.
And his career shows it.
You have to support that bag somehow.
Yeah.
I really want to watch P2 one of these days, but everyone warns me not to.
It's not that bad.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not that good either.
I love it.
It has some really good parts.
Holiday thriller.
So to talk
back to the movie. Back to the actual movie.
Too much about Wes Bentley for this podcast.
I guess one of the things for me that I like, and it was like this with Rogue Nation, and it's accentuated here, Christopher McQuarrie has this way of making these big, huge chase sequences, giant action pieces, but they feel more intimate. Like, up until the very last bit of the movie, when shit just goes insane, it feels a lot more toned down. It's not to say that the action isn't thrilling, the fights are amazing, it's just, it feels less bombastic than, Ghost Protocol did, where Ghost Protocol, kicked in the door and was like, shit's blowing up and it's colorful and crazy and kooky. And this was like, no, we're kind of telling a little bit more of a serious spy film here.
I mean, it points until, like I said, the third act, where it goes on full on, and it's like that old cliche, you won't need your whole seat, only the edge of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Where it really is, I was nervous as fuck during the entire last, 45 minutes, hour of this film. Like, geez, there's a point where a character is like, wait a minute, what do we have to do? And they just kind of all look at each other. I was like, Ving Rhames totally should have said, we're not called the PMF, right? This isn't the possible mission force.
The probable mission.
Yeah, or probable. It's not even the extremely unlikely mission force. It's the impossible mission force, which, so far, obviously, they haven't earned that title.
I have expected,
they keep succeeding.
Yeah, I have expected Ving Rhames to die, 5 times in this film.
I thought he was going to die early.
Did a good job teasing the possibility of some of the side characters' deaths, and I did once again, where I think the films really started to come together for me was with 3, and even more so with 4. They start going, wait a minute, aren't these supposed to be more ensemble films, like the TV show? Because the first two films kind of ignore that. Yeah. They're just Tom Cruise's movie.
Yeah, well, De Palma didn't want to, but the studio said, all right, well, you got to kill the team.
Right.
And it's because it's a Tom Cruise movie.
But ever since Simon Pegg came into this, it's it's always that team. Changer. This is more firmly kind of makes Rebecca Ferguson as a character we can expect to see more of as part of the team. I really, really enjoy that aspect. Even if the middle act of this does kind of send Tom and Henry off on their own to do their own thing for a bit.
Don't you like that? It does.
Yeah.
It's just the duo.
It works. It does. I don't think it doesn't work, but it was also a relief when suddenly the other guys are there again and are full-on part of the story.
I think it was important because Henry Cavill is such an integral part of this movie that you needed that to go, here is a character, he is competent, he is flawed, he is entertaining.
It's just debatable whether or not he's competent, though.
Well, I don't know. That bathroom fight. I was like, I wouldn't want to be in a fight with that guy.
That was so well choreographed, that whole sequence.
But
oh
the first
gosh.
Time, they go out, he's like, I'm just going to listen to you real quick, and then, almost dies within, 10 seconds.
Yeah, they start off almost playing it like it's going to be a joke how overconfident he is about himself, and then that never really comes back around again.
That bathroom fight, it felt so much like the fifth Fast and the Furious movie, I think, when the two guys are fighting an actual kung fu expert, and they're like, shit, we are getting our asses kicked just resoundingly and trying to figure out. That's what it felt like, where Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill were completely outmatched by that one dude. They're just like, I really don't want to do this shit, but I gotta fight you.
This Asian guy's half their size is wiping up the floor with both of them, who are, obviously dangerous opponents. Yeah. And there's a scene where they're both caught on the floor, panting and bloody, and the guy's standing up just going, like a Mortal Kombat character ready for round two to start.
It was like a whole conversation with them all.
The whole audience started laughing, because it was. It was like, that point, they both got to roll their eyes and go, all right, let's do this. there's a lot of nice little funny moments that don't even require a quippy line of dialogue to be funny.
That was in the last one, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was talking about this when we walked out of the movie theater. I think Christopher McQuarrie is the master of the nonverbal cue. It's why I love Leah the Gun so much. It's what I like about these two. He can have an entire conversation and just a nod. And it works.
Yeah.
It happens a lot, too, with these characters. And it really does make for some great moments because of it.
I don't want to, like, say this movie's flawless. I think there's a very telegraphed character-based plot thing here.
Yeah, very.
That ends up, like, you know, regardless, having, like, I would say two really nice payoffs after that with that character with really awesome scenes, one of which I was like, oh, now that I didn't see coming. Yeah.
It made me really, like, accept that terrible, like...
how overly telegraph. Obvious it
like,
was.
Yeah, because then it was like, okay, well, that part wasn't.
Well,
okay
I don't think it expects... it to be that much of a twist of events. I think it wants the audience to...
I think to some level I agree with
you. I was going
to
say that. I like, it was so telegraphed that I don't... I think it was like, no.
Well, I mean, this is what this is now. They're literally setting up that, okay, if you were paying attention at all, then this is where we're pointing out that this is the turn.
And even
and then later, for the slow people, then it's like, oh, okay.
Even with the law of conservation of character, you're like, well, doing the numbers, it really pretty much has to be this person. It would be weird and make no sense in the context of the rest of the film.
But that final act twist, though.
You know? Oh yeah, it was great. But the other thing that was weird, but it made me laugh because of what I took away from it, like out sort of a meta way, was that the movie really wants to sell you, and for the first time in the series, of like, that Tom Cruise is Clark motherfucking Kent. He is the, like, sweetest, most wonderful human being, most noble person who has ever lived. And they don't just, like, insinuate it. They flat out spell it out for you multiple times.
Ethan Hunt.
To Ethan Hunt. like, how many times did they... What did I say?
Tell the difference. Absolutely. Yes.
What did I say?
Tom Cruise.
Same character.
Talking about a character.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, he goes so
far... Tom Cruise has done some nice things.
They go so far to the way, even going to point of saying, like, the way that he will go and make sure that no bystanders are hurt. And it almost feels like at that scene, Tom Cruise should have like turned over and just kind of given a wink and a nod at Henry Cavill for having exactly that accusation against him for his portrayal of Superman. I thought that was kind of funny. I was like, I wonder if that was an in-joke.
So that's the thing that has drawn me to the Mission Impossible franchise is it's like a James Bond movie, but every time they do something impossible, they go, holy fuck, we totally just, like, hit a helicopter with another helicopter and somehow survived, and... okay.
That actually
I'm good
works.
Now. I'm good now.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters just going, we almost died a lot.
Yeah, and then somebody else going, so it was another mission. Exactly. It's pretty much business as usual for the impossible mission.
They're like, how do we keep surviving these things?
Exactly. I wonder what their take-home pay is.
That has to be magic.
I hope it's pretty good.
I bet you Tom Cruise just gives the other two members of his team more of his money to keep them there.
Yeah, you know he does. Yeah. Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise does.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's go into final thoughts. George, why don't you get us? You haven't said a lot, so feel free to expound at length for your final thoughts.
This is great. I think it's actually a step up from Rogue Nation. I think Christopher McQuarrie, like, this more so than the last one, is him putting his own stamp on it and just bringing back, you know, threads and details from the other films. And this is the most that they've had a direct sequel. You know, unlike the James Bond movies, where everyone is kind of its own thing, you know, this has more so become an actual arc between the films, which I've really appreciated. And, I mean, this is McQuarrie topping himself on every level from the last one. I think probably overall this is my favorite sequel. You know, it's just... you know, great from start to finish. I give it, let's do 9.5. God, I should have thought of this beforehand. Men in the bathroom stall.
Fair enough.
Yeah, right? I'm the half man in the bathroom stall.
Yeah, you guys
he's not having a good day.
You guys know what my rating is going to be right away. But
well, I know
so,
what you're going to use.
Yeah, Michael, it's Michael not. Racist. It's damn near impossible not to. So, well, the actual... God damn it. I didn't mean to do that, but let's go with it. So, I'm totally with George. This movie is so goddamn good. Like, everything about it, it uses everything it needs from all the other films and then some. Henry Cavill's really great in this film, and my God, he's terrifying sometimes, because, and they're willing to let him be taller than Tom Cruise, which is rare in Tom Cruise films. there's so many great action sequences. There's a lot of car chases in it, but each time I just couldn't stop thinking, like, just, I was just enthralled every single time something happened. There's only like one part, and it's in the trailer where, like, you know, he hits that car with the motorcycle, and I'm like, he shouldn't have survived that at all. But that's just
the only time.
But that's Mission Impossible.
That's it?
That's
the only one I'm allowed to say without saying everything. But yeah, there's a lot of it in this film, but that's one of those ones that, like, I remember even Martin was like, "That's there's no way."
I did laugh at how many people in the audience were aware enough of the stuff going on during the filming that in the scene, which isn't even all that startling to watch in the movie, when he actually did break his leg, the whole audience went, "Ooh!" Because we all know that was even the shot. They even used the fucking shot where he broke his leg. You're like, oh my God.
It's
ankle, right?
Ankle. It's a fantastic film. It's like half Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill's film and half the team's film, and I really did appreciate that even more so. There's some great twists that I didn't see coming, even though one of them, like we all said, is telegraphed. But the other ones made up so much for that I didn't even mind that. Yeah. I would have to give it 9 out of 10 mustaches.
There you go.
Frank, what about you?
I really love this film. I thought it was great, and it, you know, the only, like I said before, the only thing I really didn't appreciate of the last one about the last one was that it was short on story. It was so concerned about being actiony, and the action was great, but I felt the story was sort of just not there. This one, McQuarrie brings it on both fronts, and, you know, takes it as far as he can, and you know, he's the first director to return to the series, which just, you know, and I think that's the reason he has, like George said, made his own stamp. Put his own stamp on it, because he's gotten the chance to play around with it a bit more. You know, the action is just breathtaking. The stunts are amazing. You know, something that's grand as, like, the finale piece, and with, you know, is almost as exciting as, you know, the bathroom fight. I mean, it's really is great. I you know, the only thing I got to disagree with is I hate Henry Cavill as an actor, and this movie made me realize that. You know, I thought he was just wooden the entire time. I thought he was appropriately, like, blank, but I just, even when he was supposed to be menacing, sort of menacing.
I mean, they're saying he's the ultimate, like, CIA guy you send in when you need dirty work.
Yeah, when he cocks his arms, it's like, I will not want to fuck with that dude.
throughout the movie, I thought, maybe this just isn't the role for him, but I thought, have you ever liked Henry Cavill in anything? I haven't really liked Henry Cavill in anything, so maybe I'm just in the minority there. But apart from that, this is solid. It's great. I love how it delves into Ethan's, you know, what this sort of life is sort of doing to his mentality and his, you know, I was just playing with him. But overall, this is solid. It's probably one of the best in the series. I got to give it 9 out of 10 motorcycle chases.
Cool.
I got nothing else.
Aaron?
So I have to admit, I like Henry Cavill, especially when he's a spy, because he was great in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I thought he was great in this. This is easily my favorite of the franchise. I'm really happy that Christopher McQuarrie came back. I'm happy that he's making big budget movies that are getting good reviews and doing well, because I want him to keep making films. I think he has a really good handle on making intense action that's intimate and painful. That never gets too big and crazy until the very end when we're totally into it. I mean, I think of the entire film, there's only one thing that bothered me, and I can't talk about it because it's towards the end, but there's a little bit of a, here's a close-up of the gun that will be used to kill that person at the end of the movie. It's not that, but it's that kind of a thing. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's going to happen now. But that one little bit aside, it still doesn't matter. It's a taut, awesome last third, and is, like I said, it's my favorite of the Mission Impossible franchise. I'd give it 9 out of 10 tracking bugs.
You know, for a film that is also the longest of the films, it's out 142 minutes. Like, that's 2.5 hours. That's crazy.
That's good pacing.
It's still, they kept it paced so tight and it moved so fast. I didn't feel it either. I was like, this is awesome. I'd watch another half hour of this fucking thing. I was having a great time all the way through. And I felt like maybe the first act of the three was the weakest, but only because they really did try to make sure you understood what the actual plot was, which is labyrinthine and complicated.
Yeah, there's a huge information dump in the beginning. And I have expected Tom Cruise to be like, wait, I didn't get that last part real quick.
Hold on, I wasn't taking notes.
I need you to go rewind.
This isn't the first one in a while that doesn't begin with a giant set piece. I kept going, wait, like, when's the plane going to fly?
Yeah, it was weird that
something.
It just starts with him getting the package.
Yeah, it's just a quiet open.
Yeah,
just
well, outside of the nightmare that he's having about it, I'm on here.
I think that's where it wants to go story-wise with him.
What I liked as well is the thing, like I said, they've been doing much better and better and better since 3 is that everybody gets a chance to do something cool. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets a chance to shine. Even Michelle Monaghan gets a chance to shine in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
I was like, that's really cool. The team has gotten to that point where, like, even though nobody outside of Mission Impossible Force really trusts Ethan, the team trusts the living shit out of him. They're like, yeah, I'd do anything for that guy.
It doesn't make you miss Jeremy Renner at all, because he wouldn't have worked in this.
No, he. I don't think he would have.
Oh, shit, you're right. I didn't even realize he wasn't in this.
Yeah, no, I knew he wasn't
but,
in this.
But yeah, I thought this is terrific. This is going to make a shit ton of money, because everybody's raving about it, and it really deserves to. And it makes me excited as well, because it means we're almost certainly going to get another one, and they'll probably be moving on it relatively quickly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. So I'm going to give this 9.5 out of 10 really crazy cool Halloween masks. Next time we record, like, it'll just be George sitting here, and they'll be like, "Where's Chris?" And I'll be like,
"He was the cat the whole time."
You know, the people listening can't see the U, right?
Well, I made up. I thought it was implied.
He's holding Perry still.